24 hours. I don't think anybody's left. Well done. You made it. Day one. A lot happens in a day, doesn't it? 24 hours. Can you remember yesterday evening, this time when we were kind of gathering for the first time as this group, and the ideas you had about how it was going to be today, if you had ideas about that? Did it meet your expectations? Did you get what you imagined you'd get? It's very normal on the first day of a retreat like this for there to be some challenges, some things that make it hard to be here, some things that come and visit us and make it hard to be present, to enjoy being simple, to relax, to settle. It can be hard, can't it? There are also moments, don't you think, where everything's okay, actually. Just little moments where we feel kind of normal. We feel okay, we feel content. Not too stressed, nothing crazy kicking off. Did you have any of those today? Any moments where it's like, yeah, okay, there's a bit of peace. Things are okay. I'm content. Notice those moments. Be on the lookout for those moments. Just, they're not necessarily mystical or magical or special. Maybe they're special. Maybe they're precious, I don't know. But just sort of state normal. We're not too agitated. We're not too sleepy. We're kind of okay. We're here. We're content. We've got what we need. We're warm. We're comfortable. Ah, I can be here. Hello. Watch out for those moments. Or moments like this. You know, when we feel kind of settled and content and at ease, then we don't tend to cause too much harm, do we? You know, when we do things that we regret later, things that feel off, or we lash out, we do things that cause harm, that's not when we're feeling kind of settled and okay and content. Those are the things we when we're feeling stressed, when we're feeling worried, when we're feeling tired, when we're feeling pressured, when we're feeling tight, when we're feeling jealous, angry, worried. When those things are around, we then kind of, you know, we can cause harm to people, to ourselves. Just imagine if you have to phone your telephone provider. You know, you've got a mobile phone, whoever you get your contract with, if you have a mobile phone. Something's going wrong, they've overcharged you, or you can't get 4G or whatever it is, and you're really tired and you're stressed and you've come home from work and you were late, the trains were delayed, if it's anything like England, they're probably delayed, and you don't feel resourced, you don't feel content and okay, and you call them up and you're like, what's going on? I can't get 4G, I'm paying you all this money and I can't get 4G, blah, 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 blah. You know. We don't, when we're not kind of centered and feeling content, then we aren't so aware of how we are impacting others, are we? We're struggling to put it into words. I think you kind of get a sense of what I'm saying. So, for me, there's something very important about learning to stop, arrive, settle, and key into some contentment, some sense of being okay. I'm allowed to be here. I belong. I can show up. Things are kind of okay. Hello. If we can discover that, look after that, then One reason I think this is important, the work that we've been doing here today, coming back again and again, mind getting lost, coming back again, the grounded, quiet, still, breathing body, gathering gently, collecting ourselves. If we can find a way to arrive and feel kind of okay about just being simple and being here, then we're less likely to make a mess in our relationships, I think. In our relationships with our friends, with our telephone provider, with the people that we're on the retreat with. Aren't a lot of the things that make it difficult to settle and to be here, things that come up in relation to other people. Yeah, we are very relational. We get triggered by people. Have you noticed how when we're coming to a group like this, one thing that can tend to happen is that we notice some people stand out for us, don't they? We notice them a bit more than others, either because we kind of like them, we're like, oh, hello, who's this person? What are they doing? Oh, I like them. Or like, oh my God, look at that one over there. That one. I've got to stay clear of that person over there because I can tell they're going to wind me up. Why are they doing it like that? What's wrong with them? What's wrong with this person? Everyone's fine with this person. And then there's probably people that we just haven't even really noticed yet. So we're relating, whether we're aware of it or not. This all this stuff tends to happen. I'm not saying this is happening for you, but I think it does happen a lot. And we can wake up to this. We can look at this. One of the reasons that it's good to look at this stuff is because it helps us to settle. We can have some wisdom about how we are with others, what we do with other people, what we make them into. Then it helps us to be more centered, more settled, and to kind of tune into or key into places of feeling, things are okay, I can be here, there's some peace, there's some contentment. Okay. I want to read you something which I, if you've been on a retreat with me before, you will have probably heard this, because I feel like I always want to read it on a retreat. It just is so interesting to me. And it's about the Dalai Lama. And it's from a book by one of his old translators called Jeffrey Hopkins, who used to translate for him. And Jeffrey Hopkins, American professor, he's telling the story of being the Dalai Lama's translator, I think in the 80s or something. He says, when he went to Europe for the first time, the Dalai Lama would arrive at a city and announce, everyone wants happiness, doesn't want suffering. In India, I had attended long lectures by him 4 to 6 hours a day, 16 days running on complicated philosophy and psychology. But when he came to Europe, what did he have to say? Everyone wants happiness, doesn't want suffering. He would come to the airport and announce that everyone wants happiness, doesn't want suffering. He'd have a news conference in the city and announce that everyone wants happiness and doesn't want suffering. In city after city after city. I thought, what's wrong with him? It caused me to wonder if it was even relevant. But it is relevant. For understanding that others are so much like oneself creates a different perspective. A startlingly changed worldview. When this view is internalized, you're no longer confronting another person over a divide, but meeting someone with whom you have much in common. You begin to feel you know the person. Indeed, you begin to feel you know everyone. Everyone wants happiness, doesn't want suffering. How's your practice been going today? How would you assess your practice, the stream of mind states and thoughts and bodily sensations and contractions? And have you been assessing yourself today in your practice? Have you been concerned with how your practice is going today? Have you been judging yourself about how your practice is going today? Have you been too slack, too harsh on yourself? Have you been obsessed with your practice today, even the most little bit? It's one thing that can happen, isn't it? How can I get this thing to work? I can't get this meditation to work. Or I'm getting this meditation to work really well. I've sorted it out now. Great, there we go. While you've been doing that, if you've been doing that, the person next to you's been doing that as well. Probably. And we can think about that. We can reflect on that. There is a metaphor in the old Buddha's teachings. He likens our dose of suffering for the day or for the week or for the life is like a spoon of salt. I think this is a great metaphor. And he says our hearts are like a glass of water. The space of our practice, you could say, is like a glass of water. Put a teaspoon of salt in it, that's the life suffering, this is our practice. Stir it round. Not very nice. Salty, doesn't feel good, can't take it, makes you feel sick, rather not happen, but, you know, rather that it didn't happen. He says, if you can make your heart like a bigger body of water, like a lake, put the teaspoon of salt in the lake, can't even really taste it. Can't even really taste it. So our salt today, well, we're going to go through some of the things that this salt is. But one of the ways that we can relate wisely with our dose of suffering, whether it seems fair or unfair, is to learn how to think about other people in a certain way. Learn how to think about self and other. And remembering that just as I want happiness and don't want suffering, the same is true for you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you. This is one way that we can explore how the heart becomes bigger, how we can take the salt, the dose of salt that we get in our lives, you know, the things that challenge us. So what gets in the way of us being able to be calm, content, centered, and just feeling okay, like we belong, it's okay to be here, things are okay, we can show up, kind of at peace, hello, state normal, ah, what gets in the way of that? Well, there is one way we can break this down, and we can look at this. Sometimes it feels like we just can't be present. We're just so distracted, we're so tired, we're so agitated, we're so full of painful feelings, we're so full of difficult emotions. It's just like this, oh my God, I can't do this. I've no idea why, but this is really annoying and really hard. And what's going wrong? It doesn't seem to be working. I'm sure meditation's not meant to be like this. This is difficult. It can be really helpful to break it down and start to sort of, you know, deconstruct, pull apart this mountain of suffering. That's a bit extreme, isn't it? The things that get in the way. It really helps to break it down and start to notice the different pieces, the building blocks, if you like, of the things that the difficulty in being centered, being settled, and being in a simple and kind relationship with other people. we're settled, when we're centered, when we're not full of agitation and worry and difficulty, we tend to be kind and available. You see, there tends to be loving kindness just there. Loving kindness and compassion. I feel okay. I feel safe. I feel grounded. Oh, I'm available. Be well. How are you? Be well. Easy. Comes easy when we're centered and settled. What gets in the way? What makes it difficult? One of the things that makes it difficult is a dynamic or a mind state called aversion. Aversion. When we're averse to something, we don't want it. We hate it, maybe. We don't like it. We want to push it away. We want to get rid of it. We condemn it. We say it shouldn't be here. Now that can happen with people, can't it? We think, oh, I wish that person wouldn't be here. I hate them. I wish they weren't there. I wish they'd go away. We do that to people. We also do it to things like pain, don't we, in the body. It's quite hard to be with pain, isn't it? What we tend to do in relationship to pain, or one of the things we do, is we say, oh, this shouldn't be happening. I don't want this to be here. And we try and push it away. We're averse to it. We don't want it. Felt any of that today? Any not wanting? I don't want to be here. This is boring. I hate this. This is stupid. I'm rubbish. They're rubbish. It's good to know that this is normal. If you're having aversion today, or any day of your life, it doesn't mean that your practice is going wrong. It doesn't mean that practice doesn't work. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. What it means is that you're a person. That's about all it means. There's a metaphor in the old Buddha's teachings for this dynamic, this state of mind. Again, he uses water as the metaphor for the body, for the heart or for the mind. And he says, when there's aversion in the mind, it's as though the water is boiling. You know, when you're angry, you feel like you're seething sometimes. It's like this bubbling, boiling. It's kind of, anger can be hot. Anger, irritation. These are types of aversion. Aversion is supposedly is the kind of opposite of loving kindness. Something like that. When there's loving kindness around, there can't be aversion. And when there's aversion around, it's like there kind of can't be loving kindness. And the metaphor when aversion passes is like recovering from a fever. If we imagine you're sitting here and you're feeling pretty irritated and you're like, God, I cannot settle. I'm just, why am I so wound up today? Oh, I'm annoyed. Oh. Something like that might be happening. And then we notice, oh, there's this mind state called aversion that's happening in the mind, in the body, in the heart, in our experience. This is what Paul was talking about. Metaphor is the water's boiling. This is something to notice. So notice it. What is it like? It feels like this. There's anger and it feels like this. It's uncomfortable. It's hot. It's itchy. I'm not settled. Feverish. Spend some time with it. Maybe at some point it passes. Apparently this passing is like recovering from a fever. You know, if you've been sick, you've been in bed for 3 or 4 days and you just feel really tired and you can't eat anything and you feel awful, no energy. At some point you start to get some energy back. There's a kind of a relief in it, isn't there? It's like, oh God, I'm starting to feel good now. Okay. Oh, I feel like I'll eat something. I've got my life back. Great. There's kind of a relief, a sense of relief. So this quality called aversion is one of the things which makes a mess of our contentment, isn't it? And it's one of the qualities, one of the characteristics, one of the dynamics that we find in the Buddhist teachings. It's one of what's called the hindrances. If we're not aware of the hindrances, like aversion, then they become an obstacle. They become something which stop us settling and something which stop us seeing other people through kind eyes, noticing the humanity in another person. When you're angry with somebody, you're not really thinking, just as I want happiness and don't want suffering. That's also true for this person. You don't tend to think that, do you, when we're like, this person, blah, 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 they did this, they're the cause of my suffering. So isn't this something that's important to start to become aware of, start to be able to notice, start to be able to learn how to work with? So, yeah, if there is this quality in the mind, boredom, anger, irritation, aversion, then it's not a mistake. Doesn't mean we can't practice. But we do have to notice it. We do have to get interested in it. We do have to find a way to meet it so that we can work with it. Because the real gift of this practice is that we discover that all of these challenging things are workable. We're not destined to be stuck in them forever. There's something really liberating about that. And at the same time, we do have to do some work of investigation and learning to be present and notice things and start to develop a wise way of relating to our pain, to our colleagues, other people. Another thing which comes up all the time and makes a mess of our meditation and makes it hard to relate in the same way to people is something that sometimes gets called sense craving, sensory craving. Don't we sometimes turn other people into things that we want for us? Oh, if only I had that person, then my life would be so good. Oh, that might, they would really fill the hole that I have in my life, in my soul. Oh, if only, if just I had that person, then everything would be fine. You can get obsessed. You can get tunnel vision. We can make somebody into something that we think will solve all our problems, and then because of that, we want to have them for ourselves. As though they're, I don't know, a car or something. Another accessory for our perfect life. Oh, I've got a good job, got a good house. Partner, yes, there we go, that one. Ooh, hello. When we're doing that with people, it gets in the way of us remembering that, oh yeah, just as I want happiness and don't want suffering, that's also true of this other person. They have their hindrances, they have their aversion, their restlessness, their sleepiness, their struggles. They have their practice, their life going on in them. We don't see that because we turn them into something for us. If we're aversive, we make people into something which is the cause of our suffering. This person is the cause of my suffering. The people on the end of the phone who won't sort it out are the reason that I am angry and it's not fair. We give them a lot of power. Make somebody into something for our pleasure and our delight and our healing and our perfect life. We make them into an object. We cling, we fix people. And we get stuck in this. And it gets in the way of loving kindness and compassion. If we are, you know, of course we have craving not just for people. You know, we have sense craving for chocolate and coffee and ice cream and films and books and drugs and video games, beaches. I don't know, you're getting a list of my addictions here, obviously. What have you been craving here on this day today? Anything that's been... when we're stuck in a fantasy about a person or a situation that we wish we'd had because where we are now isn't good enough, we're not content, we feel uncomfortable. I just wish I was on the sofa with this person. Be nice, wouldn't it? Bottle of wine, cuddles. Wow. when we're in that, we're not really doing the work of being present and collecting ourselves. We're doing something else. Not to condemn that, it's the most normal thing in the world. But what do you want to do with your time and your life? Is it important to learn how to be centered and collected and to arrive more deeply? If it is, then we've got to notice what our mind does, the places that it goes. Does it go into aversion? Does it go into sense craving? But it's really important not to think that we shouldn't have sense craving or aversion or something like that. They're important. I mean, when we're angry, sometimes it means we need to draw a boundary. We need to say no to something. And desire isn't a bad thing all the time. It's like we want to be well, don't we? Everybody wants happiness, doesn't want suffering. There's desire in that. I want to be happy. I want to be well. That's okay, isn't it? I want to be well. I want you to be well. I want you to have a good retreat. That's a kind of wish, a kind of desire. But there are times when we get tangled up in things which don't help. If we're causing agitation, so we're fantasizing about going somewhere else, let's wake up to that and see what's going on. Is it helping us to be centered and settled? Are we doing the work that's going to be useful for us this week? Sense craving, apparently, the metaphor is like a body of water is the heart. When the sense craving, it's like it's got paint in it or dye. So we can't see clearly. We can't see to the bottom of things because it's obscured with maybe the paint of the fantasy. You know, fantasies can be very visual, lots of colour. We don't see the space of the mind. We just see the image of this person. Oh, if only. We miss so much when we fixate in that way. If we notice there's some craving, we're really lost in a pleasant fantasy about something. We wake up to that and we realise there's an energy in the body. It's like, oh, that wanting. It's kind of not very nice to have to feel. I'd rather just go and try and do something about getting what I want. But if we stop and we see if we can feel it in the body, it gives it a chance to change and to shift and to move and maybe to pass. And the metaphor for this hindrance passing is like coming out of debt. Finally got round to paying the last 3 months' rent. Finally paid off the credit card. Finally paid back that friend. Ah, thank God for that. I can stop worrying about that now. Relief. Okay. Okay. What else has been getting in the way today of just being content and kind? What else has been getting in the way? Any drowsiness? Sleepiness? What have you been doing this at all? If you're doing that, open your eyes. Have a breath. Stand up. Stretch the arms. Look at something light. It's really common, particularly on the first day of a retreat, that there's tiredness around. We forgot to say last night that if you were really bringing tiredness with you from home and you didn't want to come for the first sitting, then you could sleep in. Sorry that we forgot to say that. It's a bit late now. But there's a wisdom about knowing when you need to catch up with yourself. It's something we have to know about ourselves. Do we need to catch up with ourselves? Of course, it's easier to fool ourselves. It would be nice just to sleep all week in some way, wouldn't it? That probably wouldn't be the best use of our time. But sometimes we're carrying tiredness, and the best thing for that is de-dukkharizing with a duvet. Dukkha means suffering. Getting horizontal, resting, trusting into the bed, the earth, letting the energy and the vitality come back. Learning how to rest. And it's also true that drowsiness can be something a bit more more to do with not really wanting to be here. You know, some people we're attracted to, some people we're repelled by, some people we just blank, we just ignore. We do that with experience, don't we? Some experiences we're drawn to, some experiences we don't want, and a lot we just like don't even notice. We kind of want to check out. We don't really want to show up and see what's really actually here that we don't normally notice. Drowsiness can sometimes be a kind of resistance to being here. The metaphor for this hindrance is like a body of water that is clogged with algae. You know, this sort of weed that you get in the lakes here sometimes, maybe. You can't see through to the bottom because it's clogged up with this gunk, this algae. Sometimes it feels like that, doesn't it? The head is thick with cotton wool. Oh my God, I'm so bunged up and tired. What is going on? Oh, it's quite hard to be with sometimes. And sometimes it's like, okay, I'll just be half asleep. I think, yeah, that's quite nice. Time will pass if I just sit here and this is kind of nice. Disappear down a dark hole of blissful drowsiness. And disappear, because I don't really want to be here. It's too hard, it's too confusing. So we want to wake up to this, if this is what's happening. If we're not aware of the hindrances, then they're influencing the way that we are paying attention. They're influencing the way that we see others and we see ourselves. When we're angry, people look annoying. Sometimes, don't they, for example? People seem to be annoying when we're angry. So when drowsiness passes, it's like, what does it feel like? I think it's like coming out of jail, isn't it? Coming out of prison. So with these hindrance factors, what we're actually challenged to start doing is noticing, first of all, when they are here. When is the drowsiness in the mind? Noticing. Ah, aversion, craving, drowsiness. Okay. I'm glad I noticed that. This is something that needs some attention. By noticing it, we start to make it less of an obstacle and more of an object for us to develop our practice with. The hindrances are the visitors that come to us that help us to grow our patience, our awareness, our loving kindness, our interest, our curiosity. These qualities that we want to be bringing into being in our practice. So they're kind of like annoying teachers. That's what they are. They're like annoying teachers. If we're willing to work with them, then we can learn a lot from them. They're a little bit like the gym in a way. You know, you have weights in the gym. Weights are kind of annoying. It's like, that's heavy, that hurts. But that's how we get strong. And we keep doing it. And then it feels good afterwards sometimes. So the hindrances are our resistance training in the gym. How we learn to make our presence and our mindfulness and our loving kindness stronger. We have to notice when they're here. We have to notice when they're not here. What does the mind feel like when there's no craving, aversion, or dullness? Maybe it's a little bit like this kind of feeling okay and content that we're talking about. Oh, I'm going to notice that. That felt good. Kind of together. I don't hate anybody. Okay. That noise around there, it's not annoying me, it's just noise. There's no aversion. How does it feel? We also have to get to know what causes them to arise and what causes them to subside, which is a kind of a big thing, really. I was just planning, I didn't think I was going to say this, but I was just planning the talk earlier, and I was looking for a book to write on, you know, to support Don Sampo earlier. And this book, I picked it down, and it was like, oh, that's a good hardback book. Oh, and it's like lots of nude photos. It's like some very arty art nudity book. And I was like, oh, wow, look at that. My God. And I could notice it's like, oh yeah, That's of interest, isn't it? Look at that. And it was very clear that the kind of the charge, the sort of the feelings that come up around looking at naked bodies. If I hadn't seen that book, that those feelings wouldn't have arisen, probably. It's a very simple way to understand how the hindrances can arise. Certain, it's why we come on retreat, isn't it? Lots of things trigger us. We're so triggered. We need to say, okay, I'm going to take myself away from the things that are triggering me so that I can find some space. So we're already working with the hindrances here. So if there's drowsiness in the mind, if the head is foggy and you feel sleepy, it doesn't mean that you can't be present with it. It's like the content of the mind isn't so important. What's more important is the way that you're meditating with it. That's how I think about it. We can grow really strong presence and spacious, forgiving mindfulness with drowsiness. Metaphor that one of my teachers always would say was if you're walking along a cliff and the cliff edge is quite close and there's a big drop and then there is a fog comes down suddenly. You can't see more than 2 feet in front of you because it's suddenly like a cloud. But you're still walking along the cliff edge. You're present, aren't you? You're like, okay, I don't want to fall off the cliff, so I'm going to pay attention here, even though you can't see because it's foggy. Or you wake up in a strange house in the night, you're staying with friends and you haven't been there before and you need the loo and you get up and you know that there's stairs off the corridor at some point and you're like, I don't want to fall down the stairs, but I can't see anything. So it's dark, you can't see, but you're very present because you don't want to fall down the stairs. So we know how to be present. We already have a sense of what it is to be present in the middle of something which means we can't see so clearly. We already know what that's like. So, you know, if you're foggy-headed, you can open your eyes and do what you need to do. Do faster walking period. It's fine to do whatever to get some energy in. And we can still be very present with the mind state of drowsiness in a helpful way. It's the resistance training in the gym. The mind is heavy. Can my presence be strong? Can my interest be strong? What is this mind state, actually? Normally in life, when this mind state is here, I just go and crash out or distract myself or do something. Is there another option here? Is there another way to be with drowsiness rather than just following what we normally do? We might learn something useful. Another thing that gets in the way of simple, kind, contented being. Another hindrance. Restlessness and worry, sometimes called. Isn't worrying about things really painful and quite tricky? You know, you're worried about something happening, some part of your life, some relationship, some aspect of your life, work, money, health, relationships, meditation practice, all the list of things that we've got to try and get right so that life is a success. We get into worry so much, don't we? Has there been any worry or anything here today? Insecurity, worry, anxiety. I'm a bit worried about that. Waking up in the night feeling, oh, God, how is that? How's that going to sort itself out? Worry. Really, really painful. Well, you can't sleep at night. You're just restless. You can't stay. You stay still for like what seems like 10 seconds and then you just have to move. You have to move again. You put the pillow over your head. It's like you have to move. And then you put the earplugs in and you have to move. And then nothing works. So what is that about? This restlessness. It's kind of tormenting. The metaphor for this one is like the water that's got the ripples of the wind on the surface. It's agitated because of the wind. So we can't see clearly because there's ripples. And when this hindrance subsides, it's likened to being freed from slavery. So if we have freed from slavery, coming out of debt, recovering from a fever, and what's the other one? Free from prison. It's a big deal, isn't it? If any of those things happen to you on any day, it's like, it's a good day. So these aren't just little things that we have to get out of the way because we're beginners in meditation or something. These are just right in the middle of our lives, these things, and learning to work with them. There's a Burmese teacher called Tejaneer Sayadaw. Some of you might have sat. Who sat with Tejaneer? Who's Tejaneer? Not me. I think he's been here, hasn't he? He's written a book called Don't Laugh at the Defilements. No, Don't Look Down on the Defilements. They will laugh at you. One meaning of this is these hindrances are to be respected. These things which challenge us, they are to be respected. Let's wake up to them. Let's start to notice them. Let's get familiar with them and see how we go about turning them from an obstacle into an object that we can learn with and learn from. An object or a dynamic that we learn from. So we've had aversion, sense craving, drowsiness, restlessness and worry. The last one is what's usually called doubt. And this shows up in lots of ways. This one can be one that we don't know. I didn't really realize how problematic this one was in my life until I'd been meditating for years and years. And you know, you're sitting here and you're like, I'm not sure if I should be doing this technique. Shouldn't I be doing loving kindness? Isn't this a loving kindness retreat? I like to do loving kindness. I'm not sure. But they're saying doing the breath. Okay, should I do the breath? Yeah, but where should we follow the breath? Should I follow the breath at the nose or the chest or the belly? Or the whole body? I don't know, I'm not sure. Do they know what they're talking about? Do they know what they're talking about? I'm not sure they know what they're talking about, these people. Is Buddhism a cult? It's a cult, isn't it? I'm not sure. Maybe I should be doing a different kind of... Maybe I should be doing a workshop where there's wine at lunch. That would be better, wouldn't it? Maybe there's... You know, I think really yoga's where it's at. All this sitting still. I don't know, though. You know, maybe... Or should I sell my house? Should I sell my house? Should I buy those shoes? I don't know. If I buy those shoes, then I wouldn't have money for the wine. So I'm not sure whether, you know, indecisiveness, insecurity, kind of a close relative of the worry, not knowing, self-doubt. Did I say something really bad there? Oh, I'm such an idiot. I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I looked at that person weirdly. Did I look at them? Did that person look at me weirdly or did I look at them weirdly? I just don't know. You could just go round and round and round in this sort of... It's really unsettling, actually. It's unsettled, isn't it? It's unsettling. And it's really helpful to start to notice that if this is happening, particularly with meditation practice, it's a classic thing. Because there are so many important questions with this whole, for some of us, is a very new world. And for all of us, there's always new levels and new depth. So there's always questions, there's always really important questions, like, what is the place to follow the breath? Do these people know what they're talking about? Is Buddhism a cult? I mean, they're important questions. But we can't really ask them if we're caught up in the doubt. It's not so useful. So if you feel like you're not sure what you're doing, try not to panic. If you feel like you're panicking, notice the panic. It might be part of doubt. Spend some time with it. It's just a storm. It's a system. It's a weather system in the heart and mind. You don't need to answer the question right now. You don't need to make the decision right now. You can go and talk to somebody about the decision, somebody who might be able to help you. They can help you with where to follow the breathing or which tradition to practice in, or what technique to do, or whether to buy those shoes, whatever it might be. There's something powerful about noticing if there is this kind of unresolving to-ing and fro-ing that's happening in the mind. It's exhausting and it stops us settling. But we can notice it it might not feel nice, but we can say, oh, here we go. I'm in indecision right now. Can I observe it? Can I sense into it? Can I notice it? Can I see if and when it passes? When doubt subsides, apparently it's like safely crossing a desert. Imagine you've got lost somewhere in the forest or something, or the desert. It can be panicky. I got lost in Greece a while ago. I was on my own walking in the hills. Not very lost. I knew it was only, there were little towns everywhere, but I was like, that path isn't on the map. What's going on here? And I was like, oh my God, which way do I go if I go that way? And I was like, it was a bit scary. I felt annoyed that the map wasn't good. I felt stupid about myself. I felt lots of things. And then I carried on, and then I saw the town on the hill. I was like, oh, that's where I'm going. Relief. Okay. So it came up, it tormented me for a while, and then it passed. And it's like, apparently it's like water full of mud. The water's muddied. We just can't see clearly because it's thick with mud. So part of our work, if we're really interested in deepening our mindfulness, our loving kindness practice, compassion, is learning a kind of wisdom in relationship to the things which make presence and kindness difficult. And this one particular model, or this little map of the five hindrance factors, might be a helpful way to start and continue to learn how to relate more wisely to self, sensations, others. Just think of the person next to you. You're sitting here. What hindrances do you think they've had today? Guaranteed they've had some, or probably all of these. Sometimes if you have a headache and you think, I wonder how many people in the world have got a headache right now. You can give more space to it. These things which we struggle with, these hindrances, they aren't so personal at the end of the day. Sure, I'm the one who's feeling this restlessness. I'm the one who can't sleep. I'm the one who's angry and wound up and annoyed at the moment in this way. And at different times, others in this room will be having their own challenges with aversion and restlessness. Because there's something universal about these experiences. We make it so much worse when we make it about us in a certain way. My practice is rubbish because I'm full of all five of the hindrances all day long. I'm rubbish. I'm useless. There's no point. What? I'm going to go home and be a failure after this retreat. We do that to ourselves, don't we? Just because we've got emotions. We've got these energy dynamics. They don't really say that much about us. They say something about us, but we're so much bigger than our hindrances. These are universal, they're shared things. At least this is a suggestion and a hypothesis of how we can start to have a more expansive perspective on these things which are difficult to be with. It opens us up to compassion when we sit with these things, just learning how to be with difficult feelings. At some point we start to realise, oh, this is what it's like to be a person. It feels like this sometimes. This can be difficult to sense into, to breathe with, to notice, to make space for. This can be really hard. And it's kind of easy to make the link sometimes that this is what it's like for people all over the planet. Whatever religion, whatever gender, whatever race, whatever politics they are. It can be hard to be a person. There is aversion and addiction and sleepiness and restlessness. And by being intimate with these things, by being willing to show up and feel them, sense them, and investigate them gently, it helps us to grow our compassion. It's kind of humbling. The messiness of the inner life sometimes is humbling. So if you're struggling with something in particular, you might like to just play with the idea, you know, just as I want to be free from restlessness and freed from slavery, I wish this be true for this person, and this person, and this person, and this person. See if that changes your relationship to the restlessness. See if it changes the restlessness itself. It might be that one of the conditions for the subsiding of hindrances is compassion. Kindness and compassion help the hindrances to become less. Don't we want to know about kindness and compassion? If kindness and compassion are conditions that we can cultivate that make the hindrances become less, don't we want to know about loving kindness and compassion? How to support these conditions to come into being? How to learn about these mind states? Develop them, strengthen them, become more familiar with them. They're a power, they're a strength that we grow and we learn. It's something we can start to choose, actually. Choose where we hang out. Maybe well. We can make that choice, can't we? Maybe well. We can choose to say that. I could choose to say bleh, or I could choose to say maybe well. But what kind of mind do you want? Okay. So we have kind of, actually we have a sort of 15 minute break before the last scheduled sitting. So I think tonight we'll just do a shorter sitting. It says till 9:15, maybe we'll go to, what do you think, 9:05 or something? So if you're really, really tired, then you might need to rest and not come to the last sitting. But you have to be careful that you're not tricking yourself. So see what you, so use your best sense of what really serves what you most value this evening. And there'll be a bell quite soon, and then we'll be back in here for the last sitting at 8:45, which will only be for 20 minutes. So do what you need to do, and we'll see you again in 15 minutes or so.